Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to The Shift, the podcast that aims to tell the no-holds-barred truth about being a woman post 40, created and hosted by me, journalist and author Sam Baker. My guest today is a woman who knows all about reinvention. For 45 years, Lynn Slater was a professor of social work with a side passion for fashion. Feeling burnt out, she started a blog aimed at women like her who wanted to talk about clothes and the way they shape our identity. And just like that, the phenomenon that was Accidental Icon was born. Suddenly, the professor found herself an influencer. And for the best part of her 60s, Accidental Icon's million Instagram followers and countless brand campaigns took over her life. Until she reached a point where she began to wonder precisely where Lynn had gone.
I don't know. I became kind of dead in a way. All my creativity seemed to go away and I started to just become super unhappy.
Now, in How to Be Old, a story of aging, identity, and what it means to be comfortable in your own skin, Lynn has done it again. At 70, she's a debut writer, something she's dreamt of from the age of seven.
What happened when I started to just put myself out in the world was that I was just on an adventure having fun.
Lynn joined me from her home on the Hudson to talk about why we need a new narrative for aging, intergenerational belligerence, her rebel grandmother, and the unlikely feminism of nuns. We also discussed how she lost herself to life online, how Accidental Icon gave her body image issues, deciding to swap fashion for family, and why she's finally realized she doesn't have to be the good bad girl anymore. I just want to start by saying I absolutely loved the book.
Oh, thank you.
I loved it so much. And I think you should be so proud of it. It's fantastic.
I am. And, you know, it's kind of an interesting backstory because, of course, all of the people who like to sell books, they wanted it to be completely about sort of the sexy story, you know, of the beginning part of my journey. And so I had the good fortune to work with the most incredible editor, a young woman, 28, and she just really supported me all the way in writing the story that I wanted to write.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? Because so when I wrote the book that led to this podcast, firstly, it was very much like, oh, nobody's interested in not being young. So no one will want to read a book about not being young. But actually, and then it was like, oh, the only people who listen to the podcast are old people. But actually, one of my biggest audience groups is 25 to 34.
Same. And people are amazed by that. But this week, it really came to me what is going on, because I read a lot of young women writers, and many of them are feminists, and they are really looking at marriage and divorce and, you know, really, really wanting the truth about things, right? And they want to speak the truth about it. And I've had a number of interviews this week where I was being interviewed by a young woman, and the questions that they were asking were really had nothing to do about, you know, sort of idealized aging. One of them said to me, "Are you afraid of dying?"
Interesting.
They now, I think, want to get beyond the fear that society has created about getting old. And they, and, you know, that's part of why I quit, because this was a very privileged and idealized version. And so I think our job as older women, and we have these audiences, is really to talk to them about, tell them the truth that yes, parts of it are glorious. Yes, many opportunities, but also parts that really suck and have a lot of challenges. And I think creative stories of how we meet those challenges, you know, whether it's, you know, your lifelong partner dying, or, you know, your mother dying, or this question about how are we thinking about our own deaths. I think we're in a serious mood time.
Yeah.
And I've seen that when people want me to just only talk about being this, you know, Instagram person, this style person, the response is mixed. And, you know, I've been trying to tell people that, because I have always had a good pulse on the public conversation, and people are serious now. They're in a serious mood. Big, big things are happening. And so, you know, the challenge is, how do you remain optimistic and hopeful, yet being honest with people at the same time?
Yeah, I read a great essay that you wrote last week about how to end a chapter, which is, you know, I mean, that's exactly what I'm interested in talking about. And you were saying in that that, you know, people only want to have the conversation about how you became the accidental icon in your 60s, but not crucially about how you're now becoming Lynn.
Right.
And that's, to me, the more, I mean, yes, of course, accidental icon is interesting and how you, you know, what led to that. But what's really interesting to me and to the listeners, I know, will be how you recognize the end of a chapter, how you keep reinventing, and how you make a path for yourself in a world where older women are either not seen or they are idealized in some way or another. Like you say brilliantly in the book, the media has two ways of being old. You can either be kind of shuffle off and be senile and crumbly, or you can fight against, and that's not a choice if you're not privileged, but that's it. That's the way. And if you're a woman, it's worse.
Yes. And I think that, you know, these two narratives of decline, which and dependence, or, you know, thriving and not needing anyone, right? And it's two polarizing narratives, just like most of the conversations become right now, at least in this country.
Oh, same here. Yeah.
And I think the fact is, at either end, that's about 3% on the decline end, 3% on the very privileged end. And we're not representing, you know, 95% or 94% of who are truly older women aging and living right now. That's my next challenge that I'm going to take on. And You know, I think what you said before too, like, why aren't people saying, when I have conveyed that I had a dream to be a writer my whole life that had to be deferred, why are they not asking me, how does it feel to be a published author for the first time at age 70?
Has truly no one asked you that?
No one has asked me that question. Everything has been about being accidental icon, with the exception of some of these younger women who want to talk much more about aging and the challenges and opportunities that come with it.
Well, let's start there. How does it feel to have achieved that dream? Something that you wanted to be from the age of seven.
Yes.
At 70, here you are. It's a thing. It's in your hand. How does that feel?
It feels incredible. And it feels like a reward, because throughout my life, you know, I was in a situation where I had to work, I had to have a career, you know, then I became a mother. And, you know, you're going up that career path. I had to go back to school and get a PhD. I am being a mother and worrying, like, okay, where am I going to find childcare today? And, you know, that younger life is often a very stressful time. And because we have a failure of imagination and we don't daydream when we're young about what kind of older woman we might be, right? I realized if I knew, if I had had that daydream of, well, just sit tight. You know, you're going to get through this and you will do it someday, that would have been such a comfort to me.
But we don't want to think about it, do we? We're like educated to just put that in a box and pretend it's not going to happen.
Right. And there's all of these books about, you know, how to find the perfect job, how to find the perfect relationship, how to have the best pregnancy, how to be a good mom. But that's really why I chose the title that I did, because even though it may limit the audience, but there's no how-tos about how to be old that are about the positive aspects of older life.
I mean, when you were growing up, when you were little Lynn, did you see models of older women that showed you a way, or not really?
Well, I did. I had three different kinds of women in my life. One was my mother, who was a very brilliant woman, but because of religion and society at that time, her life was being a wife, a mother, you know, a housewife. And she was not happy. You know, she had six children. It was a lot. And then on the other side of the coin, I went to Catholic schools and I saw nuns who were also under sort of a patriarchal system. But I watched because they were sort of in charge of the schools. So I watched how they maneuvered and sort of worked within this very oppressive system, you know, in order to get what they needed for themselves and for us. And then my grandmother, at the age of 61, when my grandfather passed away, she literally sold everything, went to live with her three sisters, and then proceeded to travel around the world until she was broke. And then she came home to live with her children, primarily my mom. So I had these, you know, very different perspectives on what it meant to be a woman and, you know, how did I want to live my life? And so in a way, I started Accidental Icon when I was 61, kind of being like my grandmother. Mm. And I ended up more in an in-between place, still having all of the wonderful impulses my grandmother had to experience new things, but then also the sort of dignity and joy that my mother did get at various times in her life from caregiving. So I feel like I'm in that sweet spot right now in between the two of them. And then my writing and my intellectual approach to living is courtesy of all the nuns.
It's really interesting. I mean, I won't go on about it, but that you mentioned the nuns, because Julia Cameron came on the podcast and she also mentioned the nuns as the first women that she'd ever seen who had authority and control over their own lives, which is something that I'd never thought about until that point.
Right. And I think, you know, I went to an all-girls Catholic college and I was taught by nuns. And that was in the early 70s. And their whole approach was so feminist. And they were just making us think in ways that, you know, I've subsequently gone on. I have two masters and a PhD. I was never challenged in my education again, even in a PhD program, the way that I was by those nuns at that time in the world. Just really learning how to critically think was the biggest thing that they taught. And I was looking back at some of the old newspapers that were happening when I was going there, some of them, and there were articles like Angela Davis, saint or sinner. And they were looking at both sides of what in other more conservative colleges and circles, a woman who was being demonized, right? And so here they were putting in front of us a woman of color who was very rebellious, almost an anarchist in some of her moments. And they were challenging us to think about it in a way that did not polarize how we think about her. So to me, greatest gift.
I noticed that the book is dedicated to your mother who taught you to be a belligerent woman. Tell me about the intergenerational belligerence in your family. I love that. I absolutely love that.
Well, I think, you know, my mom, my grandmother, of course, you know, she did something that most women of her time would not do. And it made her children incredibly angry with her. My mother was very, very angry with her. She felt abandoned and, you know, her children absolutely hated it, but, you know, she did it. You know, she challenged the norms. And I think my mother was more of a challenger, sort of by showing and not telling in a way. You know, like in the book, I talk about how she chose my name, which is the male version of Lynn. She always cut my hair short, but she put fancy dresses on. Like she played around with gender, and she also treated my sister and I very, very differently than my brothers, you know, and we always resented it because we felt like she was being way tougher on us, but she was really preparing us to be women in the world and in the world where women still to this day don't have equal pay and things like that. So, and then, you know, my daughter was belligerent from, you know, the moment she was born and just has always been, she's had this incredible capacity to like not follow along with her peers and take her own path. And I remember one time when she was in sixth grade, there was something, I forget the specific issue, but her peers were all advocating and they had a petition and she was the only one who didn't sign it because she didn't believe in what the rest of them wanted, you know, and now my granddaughter is also doing that, you know, doing the world differently than other people might expect. So
one to be proud of, I think.
Yes.
I was interested, there's a line in the book where you say the accidental icon looked like acceptance of aging, but really it was denial. Can you talk about that?
I think it became, what was very strange about this whole experience to me was that I never set out to be the accidental icon and to sort of end up where I ended up. That it really was a response to what I had done my whole career, which was when I felt burnt out, I needed, for me, self-care has always been creativity. You know, I don't light a candle or take a bath. I kind of go and put myself into a space that I'm not familiar with. It could be a continuing ed class. It could be events, and just kind of put myself in it. And so it really began as a way for me to express that I was feeling burnt out in academia. And I just wanted to write and study clothes, actually, not even fashion, but the power of clothes and the power to impact identity and what they say about society. And I never intended it to become, you know, what it did become. So I think what happened when I started to just put myself out in the world was that I was just on an adventure having fun. I had no intent that it had anything to do with age. Mm. And then once I was out there, society made it about age, right? And even the narrative over the years changed, because in my early years, if you look at sort of the articles that were written about me and the press about me, it was about me as an individual who was this social work professor who accidentally, you know, reinvented herself into a completely different life. And it was about creativity and it was about reinvention. And at some point, you know, I never talked about age. Mm. And people would always ask me, like, well, how do you feel about being 62 and a model or whatever? And I would say, I'm not going to talk about age. You can just look at my photos. I'm performing what it can be. And so as it became bigger and I started to have more of a luxurious, glamorous life, it got transformed into this more idealized vision of aging.
What was the point where you started to feel that accidental icon had become more you than Lynn? If that made sense. Did that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. And I think one of the blessings, right, of writing a memoir is that you really can go back and look at things and, you know, get some epiphanies along the way. And what I realized, as I was looking back in time and I was sort of documenting the story and the narrative, that in 2019, up until 2019, I had been working as a full-time professor still. And I had been doing other social work consulting. And I really, it was so jarring, but I made a decision to retire from teaching so I could spend more time on Accidental Icon. And now I saw that that's when I began to lose myself and to really get swept up and sort of lose the Lynn of me. And as long as I was being a professor and doing my social work thing, I had one foot in reality and in the real world. But once I just decided to go full on with Accidental Icon, I became a digital body. Mm. I lived most of my life online. And so, you know, I started to lose the Lynn part of me, which I felt like I had done a pretty good job up until 2019, sort of keeping my identities. They were, you know, she was more of an alter ego. Mm. But I had my very clear Lynn life, you know, that still cleaning my own bathroom, teaching classes, you know, that kind of thing. And just really a kind of working class life, you know, as a social worker and professor, I never in my life broke six figures, you know? And so this, in the losing of myself, came the opportunity to make a lot of money, which my retirement savings at that point were pretty paltry, given that many of the jobs I had did not have pensions or things like that. So it was, you know, tempting. And the worry about, are you going to be okay when you're older financially, you know, also factored in. It was multifactorial. But I do believe now that I look back at it, that when I stopped teaching and, you know, doing my social work thing, that then I became a brand.
The balance tipped.
Everybody was saying, oh, should we have an accidental icon clothing line? Should we have an accidental icon skincare thing? You know, it began to be, I became a brand.
Yeah, before you knew it, you'd have been a yogurt, you know.
Right, right. And I found myself originally, up until the point I started to really work on Instagram, I had been really doing things that involve fashion. But once that commodification happened, I was doing all sorts of other kinds of brands and, you know, dipping into other areas that really then began to just, you know, become, I don't know, I became kind of dead in a way. All my creativity seemed to go away and I started to just become super unhappy. And then the pandemic came.
So in a way, it gave you a natural pinch point?
Because it made everything stop. And part of living the commodified influencer life is that you're going 24 hours a day on your phone, right? You're constantly having to make sure you're getting followers and you're engaging with other people, and you have to keep those numbers up because numbers are what is going to get you, you know, the lucrative work. And you just start spending all of your life literally online. And it's very fast, you know, like you'll get, this came in today. Can you do it next week? It's constant. And then there's events, right? So you have to show your face. So you're in the mix and literally there is no room for critical thinking. And as a social worker and a professor, I always built a room into my process to reflect and think on how I was teaching, how I was working with the client, what things about me were coming in that I had to think about. And so being in that world just really allowed me no time. And then the pandemic in that way, because it made everything stop, it made me stop. And I got a chance to really recover sort of the Lynn part of it and then make decisions that would really kind of start to get me out of it and into a more, a life in nature, a life in family, a life that privileges the environment and is not consumerist. And so, yeah, it was the thing that happened that made me stop.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com, code program.
I noticed something when I was reading the book, and it could just be a coincidence, but it struck me a bit that the demise of Accidental Icon did run in parallel to your mother's death.
Yes.
Were you aware of that at the time, or is that a hindsight thing?
I think that's a hindsight thing, because when I moved from New York City and I did start to leave, a big reason was to be closer to my mother. And so for the first year I lived here, she was still, you know, pretty good. And then through a whole series of things, suddenly went into a decline. And so, you know, that's really interesting. I'm going to have to think about that more. That's an amazing observation, because I think probably it did in a way. I think my mother's joy in having us around her, even as she died, made me really, well, it's very interesting, because shortly after my mother died, my daughter found out she was pregnant, and she had been trying for a very long time and unsuccessfully. And I think perhaps that is why, you know, my daughter had 6 weeks maternity leave, which is obscene.
Yeah.
And there was there was so much illness in the world at that time still, as we were coming out and everybody's immune systems were, you know, just not working the way they needed to. I made the decision to offer to my daughter that I would take care of my grandson rather than him going to daycare for the first year of his life. And so I think probably that impulse was as a result of my mother, like, just showing the joy at the end of her life that she felt with having her children around her and her grandchildren. So I think perhaps I the birth of my grandson is very tied into her leaving. And so I feel like, you know, even my daughter, when she, you know, she had called me up, but she also sent me a picture of the sonogram and her her thing was, Grammy left us a little surprise.
Oh, that makes me well up.
Yes. Yeah, and so now that little surprise, you know, is a big part of our life. And in a way, it's sort of it doesn't substitute for her loss, but it makes her loss easier to take.
I was fascinated by what you said about her, your mother's descent into dementia, beginning with refusing to wear clothes. And
yes,
seeing that reflection in the way your relationship with clothes has changed as you've reclaimed Lynn from Accidental Icon. How has that manifest?
You are giving me so many epiphanies right now.
That makes me feel great. Thank you.
And I appreciate, and I'm going to say it, the deep reading that you've done of my book, because it's really a parallel process of, you know, my mother really refusing, and I guess this is common amongst people who have dementia, and there's a lot of technology, and, you know, I actually ordered catalogs from assistive technologies about clothing that you can't take off. And at first, you know, I was kind of buying into this idea that she needed to be dressed. And she was so adamant about it. And this aide was trying to get her dressed. And she was so distressed. And she turned to me and she was like, please stop making them do this. And it was at that moment that myself and my siblings who were taking care of her, like, we just said, okay, our advocacy has to shift now. It's how can she be naked in a dignified way? Which is a creative challenge, right? And it's a creative...
Just a bit.
Right. The creative challenge is not, how do we make that woman get dressed? The creative challenge is, how do we grant her wishes in her dying? And again, when I went back and I looked at the pictures, I was able to see her body, which was just breaking down every day, as something that was beautiful and something to not be afraid of.
Did it change your approach to your own body?
I think definitely. Because when you're in that world and you're unthinking, right, you do take on, like, I never really had issues around my body until I was the Accidental Icon, in the losing of myself. And during the year I was taking care of my mom and after her death, I actually put on some weight and I was starting to torture myself about it, you know? And I was like, oh my gosh, this is like Accidental Icon. This is not you. And I have a great doctor who said to me, basically, she said, you know what, you were underweight before. And as you age, that puts you at great risk of frailty. And so these few extra pounds on you is actually a good thing. And it's not like you're unhealthy. But again, another shock, like, whoa, I've internalized these horrible ideas about how an older body must look. And I think for me now, that's part of my distress about seeing all of these, you know, again, on that other end of the aging polarization, you know, people doing things like at 90, like running marathons. And yes, that's wonderful. And there are some people who are 90. But I think more distressing are the images of older women who look young because of this labor that they're doing on their bodies and on their appearances and putting in like hours a day. I mean, I know my metabolism is in the mud. And for me to look like some of the women who are being represented, it would mean a good 3 or 4 hours of working out and aerobic activity. Yeah. And so the question is, where do you want to spend your labor as an older person? And so for me, I was like, you know, you made one decision and now you need to make another. You know, how much labor are you going to keep putting into your appearance? And I think it's so distressing for younger women to see that, because so many of them now are trying to challenge, you know, how our bodies are viewed and what does beauty mean and what kind of outfit do I have to wear? Like, a lot of young women are saying, I'm so tired of that. This is exhausting, this amount of time and money spent on appearance, which I think social media has fueled.
Totally, yeah.
And it's labor. That's what people don't get. It's labor and it's money, right? And so when you come to my age of 70, the question is, and I wish people asked it earlier in their life, where do you want to spend your money and your labor? And is it really on your appearance? Like, let's break that down. And so I think more stories of women who are older, who are still laboring, but they're doing it in incredible, life-giving ways. Those representations need to get out.
Yeah, I mean, you've written an essay about it on Instagram, but you also say in the book, you talk about a moment, I think when you were about 60, when you looked in the mirror and got a shock because you didn't recognize the person that you saw. And I think everybody, you know, certainly everybody listening to this will recognize that moment, will have had that moment. Who do you see when you look in the mirror now?
I see an older woman who has beautiful skin without using products, maybe some moisturizer, who has a very healthy body, which is a privilege. Yes, she does have pain in her knees. She has ringing in her ears and some other things related to age, but she looks happy and she looks healthy and sturdy, like she still has a lot more work to do.
There's a lovely picture, one of many lovely pictures of you and your partner, Calvin, on your Instagram. And it really, I burst out laughing because you're both wearing shades and you're looking very, very cool. And then you, in the caption, you say it's because we want to protect our eyes from macular degeneration. It's just, to me, that's because I wear sunglasses all the time and for similar reasons. The light brightness hurts my eyes. And it just really, really made me laugh, because what you see and the reality behind it, you know, and the problem with social media is that you just don't, unless you look, you don't see what's going on behind.
Right. And I think the important message is, you know, it's not mutually exclusive to acknowledge the disabilities and risk that are inevitably going to come if you are lucky enough to have a very long life. You know, my mother was 95, and that means I could have 25 more years of life. And so, you know, you can still be cool and have macular degeneration, right? They're not mutually exclusive. And that is the messaging, I think, that we need to focus on.
I mean, it's like when you talk in the book about the way fashion approaches or doesn't approach older people. And, you know, but part of what Accidental Icon was inadvertently part of was a rising visibility of older women in fashion, but the women who were allowed to be visible in fashion only being allowed to be of a certain type, you know, cool, thin, you know, so like Maggie Smith doing the Loewe ad, you and Joan Didion in Valentino and Celine, which is, you know, the coolest campaigns ever. And it's not, do you think that we will see a point in fashion that there's any hope of the fashion industry embracing older women in a more genuine way?
Not now, especially, right? Because if you go back in history, right? And one of the reasons that I love certain designers like Yohji Yamamoto and Jean-Paul Gaultier is because they were featuring older women in some of their shows, like in the 1980s. That era of fashion designer is gone. And it is now all of the big conglomerates that own all of the fashion houses. And it really is about selling clothes. I thought in 2014, when that first came out with Joan Didion and I, that it was a really important moment in fashion, because I was just an ordinary person. You know, she was a bit more of a celebrity, but she was a serious writer. We were like two serious women who were not celebrities, or I wasn't, who were really being featured by these brands, right? So in that moment, I felt like something was happening. But then, like all kinds of forward motion, over time, you know, there's blowback. And for me, I could see it in the different narrative about me over time, where at the end, I was being featured not as Lynn Slater, an individual who reinvented, a professor, this interesting individual. I was put into these categories with other people whom I had nothing in common with, except we have gray hair, and we were being called senior influencers and Instagrammers.
So patronizing.
So, yeah, in answer to your question, not hopeful it will be genuine engagement. You know, they'll continue to feature celebrities.
Yeah.
You know, they will continue to find some cool-looking older people to put in the mix. But because, you know, now they say, oh, well, we're featuring all these older people on the cover of British Vogue, but they're all supermodels, or they were in their past life. And even though they might be more diverse, they're supermodels. And so, you know, that seems to be where it is right now.
I was wondering, in the book, you talk about what your, you know, you talk about what happened in your 50s, what your 50s represented, and again with your 60s. So I wondered, what are you taking with you into the next decade? What are you leaving behind, literally and metaphorically, and what's coming with you?
Well, I think in a way the leaving behind is sort of this book in a way. What I'm taking is this sort of privileged opportunity that I now have to have the time to really focus on developing myself as a writer. I'm really excited to start taking some classes again. I think the other thing I'm taking with me is I've been reading so many young women writers who are writing about culture today. And so enjoying my family tremendously. I'm really embedded in my new little city that I live in. And I recently started writing a monthly column for our local newspaper.
Oh, brilliant.
Those are the things that bringing in. And again, I'm putting myself into a lot of different experiences. I think the book festivals will be so much fun. I'm hoping that I can get to the UK.
I was going to ask if you were coming.
I'm hoping that that can be made possible because That is the one thing I miss and the highest point of gratitude I have for Accidental Icon was the ability to travel.
Mm.
And so I did extensive traveling to places I probably could not have afforded to go to.
All those posh hotels.
Oh my God. Flying first class. It's very rude. I have to fly economy now. So.
Right. I'm going to ask you the questions that I always ask at the end. What is your emotional age?
Ooh, I would have to say it's variable. Like one day I can be an adolescent, really being a rebel and, you know, sticking it to someone or whatever. Another day I might be feeling like I'm 30 and having to get a task done and wanting to do it well and having all the feelings that come with that. So, I mean, it's a great repertoire to have. I have 70 years of emotional experiences to feel and remember and come back to. So, yeah, the answer is it's variable.
All of them on any given day.
Yes.
Can you give us a book recommendation?
Ooh, I'm in the midst of Deborah Levy, Real Estate.
Oh, so good. So good.
Yes. I love her. She's a great writer.
What advice would you give younger women?
My biggest piece of advice to younger women would be to not be afraid to be old.
Good advice. Who is an older woman who's inspired you?
Well, I think an older woman who recently inspired me is Emma Thompson.
Yeah.
And the reason why was a movie that she did. I don't know if a lot of people are familiar with it, but it was about an older woman who was exploring her sexuality.
Yeah, Leo Grand.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And so, you know, I've read interviews about how much risking and vulnerability that it took to tell that story, but it's an important story to be told about older women because people want to think that we're not sexual at all and that our bodies are not appealing or beautiful. And I think she really was brave as an actress to take on that role. And so she inspired me to, and especially as I was having challenges about working with some of the changes in my body, it like was very, thank you.
What's your superpower?
What's my superpower? I think my intuition.
Why particularly?
I think my intuition, it served me well. I developed it when I was a little girl because I was very, very in tune with my mother. And I wanted my mother to be happy. And so I started to develop this radar where I could really intuit sort of how someone was feeling. And it actually was such a great skill to have as a clinician. And also, you know, it helped me to do Accidental Icon. It helps me to live my life because I guess it's also empathy is part of it as well.
And last one, how many fucks do you give?
Zero. Zero.
Is that new?
I have always been rebellious. Let me put it that way. A lot. My closest friends call me the good, bad girl because I always was a good girl, always got high grades, but underneath rebelled. And I think the joy of aging is that you don't have to do it covertly. You can give zero fucks like very publicly and you don't have to be a good girl when you want to. So, yeah.
Thank you so much, Lynn. I've absolutely loved talking with you.
This has been a great conversation. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy The Shift and would like to show your appreciation, why not buy me a coffee? Go to www.buymeacoffee.com/theshiftwithsambaker. You can hear a new episode of The Shift every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, please do rate, review, follow, tell your friends, because it really does help other people find us. And if you'd like to know more about my own experience of shifting, my book, The Shift, How I Lost and Found Myself After 40, and You Can Too, is out now in paperback.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.